focusing on the restructuring of SAPS and the senior appointments, the turnaround strategy. We also invited the unions, whether they will pitch, we'll have to see. And then we will also deal with contract management, the outstanding presentation that we left from yesterday. Members, just a number of announcements in terms of time planning also for next week. The first issue is we just want to extend our condolences. Our researcher, Ms. Nicolette van Sail's mother, passed away on Sunday. So we just want to inform members with regard to that. Then members will know that we've got next Tuesday and Wednesday the gender violence DBA matter, but we're going to start on Tuesday at 9 o'clock because we've got an unprecedented number of interest from civil society to ensure that we accommodate everybody. So Tuesday we're also going to start at 9 and not at 10 o'clock. And then members, I received a briefing this morning. We also will debate next Tuesday the two pieces of legislation, critical infrastructure and the IPED amendment bill, Tuesday afternoon. So good luck to the members for their preparation. So it's going to be a super Tuesday next week. Very busy. So I just want to inform members with regard to that. I will start with the introduction of the members and then we'll ask the National Commissioner to introduce the team.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning. My name is Chingi Lamola, a member of the Sports Committee. Thank you.
Madam Bakhaitu, Lina Lakatina in Jimiliwa, the Kilulukula Committee in Kalulubo.
Morning, my name is Leonard Ramasaka, a member of the committee. Good morning, I'm Jerome Mate, a member of this committee.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, Zakhele Mbele, a committee member.
Members, National Commissioner.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chair. And good morning to honorable members, civil society, and members of the Settlement Police Service. Honorable Chair, our delegation is as follows. As I announce their names, they will just make an indication. I've got Lieutenant General Masimuda, Deputy Policing. I've got Lieutenant General Vazi, Deputy National Commissioner Management Advisory Services. But Lieutenant General Zumane, Deputy National Commissioner Crime Detection. I've got Lieutenant General S.A.P. Skater, Deputy National Commissioner Management Intervention. I've got Lieutenant General I.J. Mugwena, Divisional Commissioner Supply Chain. I've got Lieutenant General Jacobs, Divisional Commissioner Crime Intelligence. I've got Major General Lenika Venda, Head Human Practices HR. I've got Major General Billy Kubu, Division Human Resource Utilization Labor Relations. I've got Major General L, Executive Manager Office of the National Commissioner. I've got Major General Ravi, Head Strategic Management. I've got Major General J. Mahadu, Head Organizational Development. I've got Brigadier Nzima, Organizational Development. I've got Brigadier Vishna Idu, Spokesperson, National Commissioner. I've got Colonel B. Stein, Parliamentary Liaison Officer. Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, General Sintole. We'll immediately start then with the presentation, the turnaround strategy of crime intelligence. General Sintole, you're welcome to go in.
Yeah, thanks very much, Honorable Chair. Maybe just say it might just be important for the information of the committee to know about the turnaround inroads that CI is already making and policing as a whole. Firstly, the attack at the police station at Ngangelizwe, where a prisoner was shot. Two suspects has been arrested within the 72-hour activation. And we had the member who has been shot at the tavern 2 days ago. The arrest of two suspects has been executed within 48 hours. They now in custody. That is also attributed to the turnaround of CI. The turnaround will, with your permission, Chair, be presented by General Jacobs. Thank you.
National Commissioner, we'll ask General Jacobs to proceed. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, and National Commissioner and Senior Management, thank you. What I'll be presenting today is the work of the last 4 months as a first bite on the turnaround. We understand the turnaround is a long term process. This would be the first installment of that turnaround. Thank you. The presentation will essentially cover the following areas: the background of the that explains the turnaround, the strategic direction and the rationale behind it, the situation analysis, or alternatively said, the findings in terms of what we found in the review, the overview of the CI turnaround strategy, then the specific intelligence intervention, the planning and execution, and then this was the brief summary of that. Thank you. Now, as we, the turnaround of crime intelligence obviously fits within the national strategy, which is known as the turnaround strategy. It's derived from the SAP's turnaround vision, as per the fourth basic, back to basic dimension. Crime intelligence and essentially we support of both reactive and proactive policing, and within that remember the ultimate purpose is to create a safe and secure crime-free environment that is conducive for social and economic stability in support of a better life for all. And for us in the turnaround vision of the National Commissioner, there were three sub-strategies identified: the CI corporate renewal, counterintelligence, and the vetting strategy. That is that outlines that particular area. So as part of the background, as I indicated, there are the corporate renewal strategy, which we've identified seven key objectives, counterintelligence, which we identified both an offensive and a defensive posture to ensure that we achieve seven pillars, and then the vetting strategy is in support of corruption prevention and identification and improvement of integrity. So it's overall part of the personnel plan to ensure that we have integrity. It doesn't just operate vetting as a matter on its own. It's literally a sub and supporting strategy. And then it's premised on four key objectives. Now, the essence of the strategy, as we see it linked to the National Development Plan, the Ministerial Vision on crime intelligence as outlined before, and then the National Commissioner's turnaround strategy, we've indicated there are three key strategies. And then in our turnaround for crime intelligence, we identified three key pillars. Is to repair if we found there were damages, to restore the integrity and the credibility of the organization, of CI, and then to redirect towards where we found the area that requires redirection. Thank you. Now, in the last, standardly, we do what we call the first 100 days. So we've completed the first 100 days. We're 4 months into that now, but the first 100 days. And essentially what we'll be talking about in the next few slides is a synoptic overview of what we found there. And that will shape the areas of intervention that we're working on. So obviously we won't go into the Secret Service account. We won't go into much that necessary. That is part of vote 24, where in the JCI. The human resource, we found the issues of discipline. There were suspensions. We found there were rotations of personnel that was happening. We had to obviously look at the repairing of those areas. Then in the intelligence and analysis environment, we had to redirect and place it at the center of the organization. We will talk to that slightly later. Crime intelligence operations, redirect, and we found that the link between analysis and operations were not necessary as as integrated as it should be. But we'll talk to that slightly later. And then our support to SACS, that climate challenge, essentially we are an enabling structure. We support and direct and enable other operational parts of the organization to operate more efficiently, like the spall and detectors and those things. Then in the external environment is to ensure that the threat management system is directed towards achieving the external environment. Our relationships with the other intelligence agencies, we've had to look at that, and it required repair in that environment. The public perception, obviously that will take longer, the perception that crime intelligence has was in the papers all along. We had to repair that image, and probably a key objective of crime intelligence is to stay out of the press, to actually do the work quietly in the shadows, and hopefully that we will achieve that over time. And then to repair we found that we needed to repair our relationship with the oversight bodies, the Auditor General, the Inspector General of Intelligence, and obviously the Parliament, that we ensure that we hear, that we provide honest and straight answers to those matters. So inside the organizational inside the organization, having done the big picture as identified in the earlier slide, we found there were within the organization that we found there were competing and different groups operating at the same time. We had to re-look at that and repair that. Where we suffered from the legacy of 7 years of acting, for which 2 years were the longest, and the shortest was 3 months. Now you can't build a big organization that's supposed to guide how policing operates. If we say crime intelligence led policing, you can't have so many acting and changing over time. So we suffer the effect and the hangover of that environment. There were issues of internally unilateral transfers. People were transferred. Just they got to the office one day, they think the infamous brown envelope happened, and people joke about it, but we had to literally unpack those issues. There were, at some point in one of the actings, people were called to a big meeting and said, you can transfer yourself to different places. So, you know, and people did transfer. So we had to obviously look at that, bring people back where we could, and deal with those processes. And then our center was weak because of the acting, various acting positions. We found there were different places that were directing us instead of us directing, policing. So we had to restore that, and I will explain how we did that, how we're busy doing that. Obviously, organizationally, that's more on the JSDI, I think one of our oversight bodies. The other part is that we look at the intel, we found a lot of disciplinary matters that were old, that we need to re-look at within the disciplinary regulations. However, if something is too old, you can't necessarily open it. But if there's a period of few months stretching over, how do we put that back on the books? So those are some of the issues we had to look at, and we're still busy with. There was a lack of policy on the issue, for example, like linking policy, linking vetting to the personnel policy wasn't necessarily clear. We're in the process of policy development of those issues, and to make it part of the complete, so that vetting doesn't stand alone as a matter, but as part of personnel. That is part of the building, the integrity. So part of the policy review, what we saw, there was that policy dynamics. Vetting linked to recruitment policy was as part of the personnel policy was also not in place, and we're in the process of reviewing and developing that. It will take us some time, but so essentially the whole policy issue on vetting was really looked at, not just vetting, people submit the form and then we complete it. It actually has to be part of a systematic process. I think those sessions are there. Then building we found we had capacity problems. There was a demand that we vet virtually the whole organization, but our capacity was was in place to vet particular applications. Now there's not an application-driven vetting capability. We require organizational-wide vetting capability, which means our capacity has to be looked at, and the whole policy personnel strength that CI had was for vetting was for to service internal services. Now we have to service the whole organization on vetting. So that requires capacity. And then generally, overall, our performance were not consistent with what where what crime intelligence could be doing and should be doing. So that's what we that's our finding on the internal organizational environment. On the operational environment, what we found, remember earlier I mentioned Jefferson, we said we were not we had to relocate the analysis capacity within the center of the organization. But we found that operations were not threat-based, it was self-directed by operatives. Whereas if we have a threat management system, that determines what operatives do. So that we don't find, and if you locate threat management system, you won't, you will reduce the element of rogueness. People operating on their own, because there's a threat file that directs where we work from. So that's kind of what we found was not there, and we are repairing that. Our technology was not up to standard to match the current challenges. And obviously, it's, how do we stay current given the fast pace of technology, the fast pace of infrastructure? So how do we stay current? So that's something that we found there was a serious shortcoming, and we're looking at how do we, given the procurement issues, given the dynamics of meeting the supply chain and the auditing concerns they've raised, we're busy developing a process of how that is managed to ensure that we stay current but meeting the requirements of the supply chain and the treasury rules. Then more focus, we found that we were more reactive in our focus as opposed to proactive, and we're looking at the threat management system will enable us to be good there. We also found that also, we had insufficient informer coverage ratio. So we, that is obviously also being looked at. And where do we improve, what kind of informants we're looking at. And then after we found there were corruption, but it's part of the whole vetting challenge. That if our vetting things improve, our personnel processes improve, our corruption element will reduce. So we found that relationship very clear. If we look at corruption alone, we'll be constantly fighting fires that are raging. But if we look at it from personnel perspective and from the vetting, then we look at the long-term sustainable integrity improvement. So that's the findings. The last issue of the findings, there was in April, or rather before I arrived there, there was a review, a survey sent out to two provinces, and the police identified particular issues with CI, and they identified issues like generally our information was not accurate. The successes on the information was limited with the police found this. Our clients, in other words, our standard of information was not of a good quality. It was lacking detail. There was no monitoring and evaluation. Our technology was outdated. It lacked analysis and the communication between us and them. That was an important indicator. What does our internal partners say about us? And we looked at that. And then the external, what we reviewed, is what is the, through the media center, our communication people, we looked at what is the public expect of us. And they want accurate information, communication to key role players, they wanted detailed analysis from, you know, of our sources must be reliable, our technology must be updated, but able to meet the standard of crime, and our monitoring and evaluation of our product standards must also be of a particular nature. And these, four or five slides that we found helped us to shape what our turnaround areas will be. Obviously, there's a number of areas, so we then looked at what we'll do short term. We'll go to the next slide, please, Ravi. As we indicated, just as a reminder, our turnaround is based on the overarching turnaround vision. Within that, corporate renewal, counterintelligence, and vetting. But as I indicated, vetting and counter is part of the bigger personnel picture. So if we go to the next slide, given the volumes of work we've covered and we reviewed, we had to be honest with ourselves and say, this turnaround won't happen within the short term. So we then identified, so you will see as the slides go along, we've got ST, MT, and LT. So short term, medium term, and long term as keys to where the turnaround and what we'll leverage on. So then under the key, as part of the turnaround was this, the corporate renewal. as I indicated earlier, we have seven key objectives there. Was to manage Interpol obligations and cooperation. That was a short term, other words, within this first 1 month to 12 months. Optimize intelligence collection, enhance intelligence coordination and analysis, optimize operational intelligence support, capacitate and resource CI, especially at grassroots level. That's a long-term matter. Develop skills of CI informers and establish a culture of performance management. That's also long-term. And optimize counterintelligence as a long-term optimizing, and there to develop and implement the counterintelligence strategy and develop a vetting strategy. So that was just the under the one pillar. This next one is just more specific detail on what that requires. If I may just have a bit of water, I think that's a lot now. Intelligence and intelligence collection was to establish the informer network in key sites. Now we'll talk to that and ensure intelligence collection is threat based and impact driven. Crime intelligence have a slogan for a long time, threat-based, impact-driven, and to get us back to relocate that slide, that theme. Okay, and then partnership, the next one is to enhance intelligence analysis and coordination. I think here, essentially, what we're saying is that the threat management system is really what we must identify the threat. Now, what we've done here is to link us back to the National Intelligence Estimate. The National Intelligence Estimate identifies four key areas. And then to link whatever we do to the National Intelligence developed by NICOP. And there's four key baskets. And that out of that, there's a number of threats that we identify. And to actually develop a capability and each basic thing, Chair, is like base documents. To get back to base documents to ensure that not just presentation, base documents that actually has the detail in it with analysis and all of those things. So that, I think, if there's more questions, we will talk about the threat management system later. Thank you. And ultimately, that will help us to assert the authority of the state. Then, operational intelligence support is our technical capabilities to ensure that that is optimized and up-to-date and standardized from the various levels of equipment that we use. That is, I think, in short, that we want to cover there. The next one, to optimize counterintelligence. And here it's really about positioning and capacitating and resourcing of the counterintelligence environment to make sure that it's not just an investigation capability of wrongdoing, but how do we put in place the principles of counterintelligence that we're there to protect the country. So whatever we do, we act in the interest of the country. And therefore, the steps we do, how we engage, who we post, for example, in Interpol, must always be there. If we go on visits, that is always the notion we should be building in. So to reposition the counterintelligence so that the whole organization understands it's not just a team of people, like the secret team, but that the counterintelligence culture is permeated throughout the organization. So that's really what the positioning meant. And capacitating and ensuring that we do that well. And of which vetting, if we're vetting is a part of that counterintelligence, which in turn is part of the personnel strategy. Then, resource and capacity TI. As you know, Chair, we are currently between about 3.8-3.9% of the personnel. Now, if we are meant to be, we must vet the whole organization. We must vet supporting services, look at the supply chain. Our vetting capacity needs to grow. We are 3.9%, but if we say we're intelligence-led policing, what should be the focus of the organization? Do we increase the intelligence footprint in terms of home bodies and in terms of capabilities and resources to deal with that? So that's what this really we saw in the need for the turnaround. So also that helps what we recruit, who we recruit. For example, typically at the airport, you don't necessarily need just policemen in uniform. You need policemen who understand border control. They understand customs and excise. They understand aviation law, Annex 17 of ACAO. They must understand that, but not just the policemen in uniform. So that's kind of what we... So it's a different kind of capacitation than just home body or bodies in uniform, depending on where they are. And then skills development. As we say, we're having people at the airport, then we need a certain kind of airport capability. They understand the border control, customs, international aviation regulation. So I mean, that's kind of what we need. Then also you can't stop all at the border post, all persons coming through. Our profiling capability of CI must be better, must be improved, and that's what we turn around is focusing on. And manage our Interpol obligations. We've, as we indicated, we've got certain both SARCO agreements and international agreements. So how do we ensure that we have an adequate footprint in the key countries where both it supports the countries that were there, are feeder countries for crime affecting South Africa, but how do we also ensure that we meet our international obligations? So that's what the Interpol arrangement is about, and to ensure that we meet, you know, the country's BRICS agreements and all of those arrangements. So that's part of the turnaround within Interpol. Then in order to deal with, but whilst we said there's long-term and immediate-term, there's also a crime crisis that we have. So we have to deal as part of the intervention with specific crime categories that we needed to assist and look at how do we provide assistance. I think the most notable one of late was obviously the CITs, the cash in transit, and what that meant and how we had to work on that. The other one is the kidnapping issues, and then we have identified through the minister's intervention also 8 key categories of crimes that require that was gripping, that is gripping the country's attention. Obviously, we can't see all of them at the same time. How do we at least reduce the level of temperature and crisis associated with these categories of crimes? And that's part of the intervention areas. Chair, I thought those are the overarching. Then there's just the other slides. Just go through the follow-up slides. Just go through the detail of that. Chair, I'm wondering if I should go through. Okay, then we can just go through that. So as we said there, and then obviously we did. If we go to the next slide, we did. I mean, as I've identified the crime issues, and then we identify them per geographic area, so to see how do we contribute in every area. Next slide. And so we went, as you know, cash in transit were in particular provinces, taxi violence in particular provinces, and so we go along. I think that's basically. So as we said, so then we went in our internal planning processes, how to locate analysis in the center, and then from there develop assessments, and then develop operations, and then resource and capacity. So the basic management process, we have to reestablish the analysis at the heart of our operational activity. I think that I will always go back to that all the time, Chair. Next slide. And then obviously from that basis, prioritize our funding, making sure that we properly resource, that if we have crime intelligence-led policing, then the 4% of where we work in our budgeting environment will grow. Thank you. I think, Chair, that is. And as I said, repair, restore, and redirect with a specific focus, Chair, on, as we said, repair and restore and redirect, and then intervention to deal with the shorter-term areas and in the process of risk mitigation. Chair, I thought that is the detail. Thank you.
Thank you very much, General Jacobs. General Sitoni, you want to add anything at this stage? Or?
Thanks, Honorable Chair. I can just add from a modus operandi analysis point of view, which has been one of our strong areas. To say the modus operandi analysis center, which is currently under construction, I think CI is the bigger link, and one of our psychological intimidation approach to criminals is to get to know the method of operating before the time, and hence most of the 72-hour activations that become successful. We're building a culture of continuous and permanent modus operandi analysis. Then under rationalization, the directive is we restore all crime intelligence capacity, add back to crime intelligence. At police station level, I've also already issued a directive with the reinstatement of the CIO capacity, so that there's intelligence process at police station levels. Then we've introduced the safer city concept. They are also working on the safer city intelligence analysis, and we've got 10 pilots, safer city pilots in the country, which I think at the present moment is an international priority. I think both myself and the minister, I will be going to Thailand on the international safer city workshop, and the minister will be going to China. Then we declared the stabilization, the national stabilization process in the country. I think what they are doing there is tactical intelligence on the stabilization, and that's what also is counted on the success of the stabilization. And the normalization, I think currently General Masemula is leading the development of the normalization plan, and there they also generate strategic intelligence, so that we're now beginning to kill the operations of the criminals, which is a de-resourcing approach. We also then working through intelligence at the cluster level, looking at the various crimes, those that attack the grand economic strategy of the country, those that contaminate the moral fiber. I think Chair might have seen the two farms where we clamped down the drug manufacturing, and one of the biggest nationally, which was at Harding. Then crimes of fear, like the heist, the house robberies, because we're also using intelligence to assist us to give the reassurance to the public with regard to their safety. Maybe for now, these are the areas, but we're looking more at the cooperation agreements by national, SADCO, SADC, AFRIPOL, and Interpol. What we're faced with now is imported modus operandi from other countries, and one of the examples is the kidnappings, where they are using the deep web modus operandi. And so we are also strengthening that area, and currently I'm leading the development of the regional and continental cooperation strategy with the other countries. So we are also sectoring intelligence as the base. Maybe for now, I can end here, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you. It's important. I think we welcome the presentation by General Jacobs. I think it is a very honest assessment, and we welcome that. It's also a fresh approach. So I think from the committee side, we would like to put the real issues on the table directly. Don't come with sugar-coated presentations. We like that. A few issues from my side, and then I'll go to the members. The first issue is, I think the minister made a profound statement last week on the issue of corruption in the criminal justice chain. It's a reality. It also implicates, of course, CI, and I mean, there's constant media reports and there's books, even on current people within CI. Now, I want to know from General Jacobs, have we cleared up the mess? I mean, if there is high-ranking people at high levels with linkages to gangsters, are we dealing with it, or have we dealt with it? Then a very important statement that the National Commissioner made yesterday in his presentation. So, well, we've got, in terms of the census, 56 million South Africans, but there is the possibility of 11 million people from outside. Now, if we analyze crime, and I mean where the Portfolio Committee went to the UK and we got the mistakes, we was for a whole day at the National Crime Agency. Most of our current crime threats, although the presentation is very much inward focused, and of course that's our main basis, is coming from outside. The drug trade, the sea resources, the rhino poaching, everything else is very much linked, SADC, but also to the other jurisdictions in the different in that area. And the question is, in terms also of the policing model, are we basing our analysis and basis, and also when we come to the restructuring debate later this morning, are we basing very much on past experiences, maybe models used previously, or are we also saying it's a new world, it's a totally different situation that we had 5 or 10 years ago? And in terms of the expertise that CI must have, for instance, and we've raised it also last year with, I think, predecessors, if you don't got the language skills within CI, you're not going to infiltrate, you know, the poacher gangs in the Western Cape. If you don't have the, and many of the mining operation gangs is a closed foreign group that comes in. Now, if you're going to operate on the old model, old technology, informal station based, you're not going to crack that. So the question is, are we looking at that, the new threats, and the capacity? The other issue is also technology. Unless you've got the, are you able to monitor, and we don't want to, if you're not able to monitor on an equal footing criminal gangs, you're not going to make a difference. Other jurisdictions, they're very successful, and I mean, that's while this whole Durban issue or the mosque issue comes up to the fore. If we don't got that technology footprint and capability, we're not going to be competitive. So the question is, General Jacobs, going forward, are you also looking at that? Because if we say this is the focus, we're looking at 56 million South Africans, this is maybe the model we used to, we can do it if we deal with it, but what about the external and the threats that the National Commissioner referred to this morning, the SADC dimension, the African Union dimension? We probably will have open borders, open trade flow in the next few years coming to the country. So will we have that specific skills? And then finally, we had Hermanus, we had also again the road incidents in KZN, and of course it's a long-term strategy. But are you confident, can you assure the committee that in terms of your informant network, you are able to have a presence in all the sectors? Because in the end, if there's an eruption, nobody knew about it, but somebody must know about it. Do we have that filter, you know, that the minister will have on the next day, if, say, instance, there's something brewing, do you have got the capability in terms of your analysis and reporting? If something is brewing in Mpumalanga today, will the minister tomorrow at 7 o'clock, or will we read it on NCNA when it breaks? That's the question, so I just want to get the responses on that. Honourable Mabija.
Thank you, Chairperson. On page 17, I see development and implementation of vetting strategy for the SAPS. And if I understood how you've been explaining how your strategies are going to be implemented, it's like you said, from top spread cascading down to local. And there's this thing of charity begins at home. And I should think your home is the local police station. Because meanwhile you are up there coming down, things are, there's havoc at level, at local level. And if the local level is not set, it's not okay, by the time you get to a local, a lot shall have happened. So it's just my request that you use the bottom-top method. If you can, if you cannot, you need to expatiate on reasons why it is not possible to start from the police station, because without the local police station being okay, there's no national a good end product of your strategy. Thank you.
Member, Honourable Muller.
Thank you, Chakasi. And thank you for the presentation. My first question will go to General Stoli. General Stoli, I'm confused. There is this question that I want to ask you. Last week in the news, there was this thing of two people who were escorted to Limpopo court, and they said they escaped on the roof of the police van. Can you please explain how did this happen? Because I can't find the answer on top of, on the roof of the police van. My second question, General Jacobs, what in slide 6, you are talking about repairing. What do you mean? My third question, how are you going to improve the services of crime intelligence at the station level? My third question is for vetting. How far with the vetting of senior managers at crime intelligence and at SARS? Because now we are talking about developing the skills and what. My last question, how are you going to make sure that there is stability at crime intelligence? Because at previous time, there was this thing of acting, and they were doing chop and change, they were suspending members, they were doing everything. How are you going to make sure that there is stability? Thank you.
Thank you. Honorable Mula, Honorable Mushlongu.
Thank you, Jefferson. My question for clarity will be on the question of turnaround strategy. Jefferson, you'll know that recently the President of the Republic announced a high panel to look into intelligence services right across the country. Then my question would be whether then that panel has actually then injected some kind of analysis and the required action plan so that we don't flip-flop from one angle to another without substantial analysis that has been done across. And I think the members that have been brought in by the President are seasoned people who come with some kind of experience even within the area of security. So then that will be my first question, so that we don't actually then get the head of CI in the country developing such a good strategy when I look at it comprehensively, but only to find that when that high panel then begin its work, injecting some kind of key areas that need to be looked at, it also tend to reverse the whole thing back. I wanted to find out about that. Secondly, is the question of this vetting. Whether the question of vetting, I know that it will be at SSA level, is actually then filtering correctly people who must go through. The reason that Chairperson, I'm raising that, I think there is a case that has been reported widely in the past in case that then of a certain person who will pose as a business person. Well, I understand because it's part of covert section of intelligence. But you will know that that person was found trading in drugs, running drugs, and all that, only to find out that person is now confirmed as a very top general within the crime intelligence. And Chairperson, what I want to find out, because this thing, we cannot allow a situation whereby our intelligence services is used to fight narrow political battles. Whether then the head of crime intelligence is aware of a solicited fund by that particular operative to destroy EFF and its president, of which then I've got full evidence that some money has been sourced from Treasury to be used to unleash unleash intelligence services against an organization. I want clarity on that, because we cannot allow that. If it is practiced, particularly in case, then as it is the case, it is going to polarize the situation very badly, particularly between Africans and Indians. Specifically those, I'm raising that question because when President Tambo instituted the Indian Cabal Commission in 1987, it was because there were upheavals within the mass democratic movement as a whole. Now, if then such people are part of these secret societies, then trying now to use their powers to undermine and destabilize our democracy, it is the duty of us, as people who are safeguarding this democracy, to root out those people. I think you know this police officer I'm talking about. Because it is completely, completely unheard of and wrong, Chairperson, that we can allow such people who are well-known criminals to undermine this democracy. Thank you.
Ms. Mushlongo, Honorable Malabasi.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question, in the restoration that you have embarked on, do you see noticeable impact? My second one, what percentage of your management is already vetted? My third one, from time to time, we hear and see products of foreign nationals who have expired being sold to our people. This can spark another xenophobic attack. What is your view on this? My next one, have you had a situation where you alert subs of any threat and there was no response? And what were the repercussions? Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you very much, Honorable Chair, and thanks to the presentation by the General. And just a few questions also from my side, or maybe just a comment. In general, what I want just to say is a start of the comment is that you are a general and you are in that position. You are not an administrator. Your work is to make sure that what has gone wrong is repaired. I'm saying that because I had a look at your long-term, short-term, medium, and long-term. And I was asking myself the question, because that you haven't spoken about that. In the part of repair, maybe that's the word. There's whole lot of challenges that the environment has experienced and still experiencing. Some of it you may be aware of, some you may not be aware of. So the question I'm asking is, this time frame that we have here, are they not going to end up being a hamstring onto your action? I can make mention of numbers. I can make mention of what I've been raising some time back about the crime intelligence footprint, but also some of the involvement of the in the sphere of organized crime, the penetration of your ability to penetrate that area. Well, there is challenge in the Western Cape. I live here. There are challenges with respect to that. So I want to understand the ability to be able to to go in and solve things, because the unfortunate part is that this thing does not it's not regulated based on time. It's regulated based on action, and that action is on hourly basis. That's the first thing I just want to find out from you. That links to the footprint, but the footprint requisite skills and the language and communities. The experience I have seen so far is that the challenge is also the question of mishmash of intelligence in community that they are not even familiar with. If it's a Xhosa speaking community and you have a deployment of African speaking intelligence, what is the hope to how are you going to penetrate? How are you going to be able to collect? Because in the first place, the identity becomes a problem. Including, I mean, you can go into all of that, including the sectors, but I'm just raising this in terms of your pillar one, in terms of your restoration, as well as a time frame of one month to 24 months. I mean, I can raise the issue about what happens in terms of deployment. And an identity of those who have been deployed to drive the processes, who in turn becomes entangled with organized crime. Your ability as a crime intelligence should be able to be miles away from that, without me telling you, without having that kind of a capacity. I make mention of Western Cape, make mention of what I've raised long time already. I think the Commissioner Stoller is aware of that. I can make mention of what was happening in Free State around the issues of heist and what role does the crime intelligence play in that. For me, Chair, why I'm raising all of these is to say, I think, General Jacob, some of the stability and stabilization action should have happened already. Because here the constraining measure is that you're looking at a turnaround. But while we're looking at a turnaround, there's certain things that must happen concurrently in terms of which is an action. So let me come back to the ratio issue. You mentioned 3.8% of in the current. I just wonder what is the norm? What will be the norm? Is the norm what is the norm is in terms of what ratio should be? Because then we're also able to gauge what is it that we need to happen. Because the committee will certainly should help you to arrive at a particular ratio. If it's police personnel is 190,000 now, what should be the ratio? Is the ratio 15% or 20%? Which should be able to happen. But isn't it that ratio should be complemented with the footprint of operatives on the ground? I mean, there is we're not going to talk about that. You already put a ring fence on that around the funding of this. But isn't it that your ability as a crime intelligence today could extend that footprint and be able to get to do a penetration even before you address the issue of the ratio? Because the complementary force here is going to be who does the collection, who helps you to collect in terms of communities. That kind of plan, for me, is a critical one that you probably have to factor in. In your three pillars, I'm missing the more kind of two other pillars. I'm missing in it, which is external. Because if you're not going to have a pillar of disruptions of what those networks, the disruptions of those already established operatives that are linking from the out from the underworld to the formal structure of the individual. You're not going to make a headway. And another D is so basically destroying those kind of networks. Those are I'm missing some of those, which is speaks to external focus, looking outside in terms of what you need to do in terms of. So maybe it's something that you have to think about. You know, the 8 critical crime that you've mentioned, the heist, the gangsterism, and the taxi killing, it's strange for me that over time, but I think your analysis and what you found speaks to why we have this problem, that for over years, we're unable to disrupt and to deal with the taxi companies. Even though we know it's a formal, it's a taxi, it's an operative, they always operate from a place, we're unable to have a footprint around it. I always wonder, what is the problem? Western Cape here, you have a heat squad. You have a heat squad that continuously does the heating. But we're unable to penetrate it. This state of affair may also speak to your issue of why we're unable to make a headway. It may influence the increase of this kind of crime, which is not necessarily going to be, nobody's going to pay for it. So maybe if you can explain that particular footprint, what are we doing with respect to that particular sector? It is a bit of a shocking state of affairs, I must say, of what you've revealed in terms of what you have found, what you've inherited, what you're trying to repair. Because it sounds to me as if we are starting policing today, when we had a structure before you, and we have a management before you, we have general before you that were driving this process. Only now we can realize that there is actually the problem is quite big. Maybe General Sithole will comment on this. And our skater at the back, and our father sitting here, and I'm a similar. Why have we allowed this thing to go in this direction? I mean, it's shocking to say you transfer yourself. Which organization people will say, just next day go and find another desk somewhere else and just work from there? It's a complete breakdown of a paramilitary structure that operates on the structure. How are we going to arrest that situation? So let me leave it there, Chair, for now. I do have but I think that maybe we'll get back to that particular issue later. Let me pause for now. But it's quite taken aback to listen to that.
Thank you, Honourable Markey.
Thank you, Chairperson. I wouldn't like to be unfair to my general here. I think what he gave us today is a strategy, not operations. He only explained what he found and what needs to be done according to him. What was wrong needs to be repaired and needs to be redirected. I should think our questions should be on that, not on some other things. I should think there will be specific strategies on each and every area, maybe on the taxi violence, and maybe those are the strategies that they might not tell us. But the main question here would be in terms of the turnaround strategy. You have got your time frames. I've got a bit of experience of working in government departments. If I don't like your face, I might sabotage you. And if you put time frames, the question is, do you have the resources to do exactly that? And if you don't, we might hold you on those time frames. And yesterday we were talking about the CETA and public works. And I see you are talking about technology and procurement. Surely in order to implement all of these things, you will need some technology, which you will need to put specifications to. And CETA might say, no, no, that is too expensive. We can only buy you this one, and so on. So the main question is, do you have those resources? And your turnaround strategy doesn't mean that every other thing is stand still. You do those things parallel. There is no stopping of operations, and you say you are busy doing turnaround. You do these things running. That is work in progress. But the main question is, do you have the resources? You have a budget that you say, this is what I will need. CETA, this is what... Some of the things, as General Store said yesterday, some of the technology, those guys in CETA don't even need to know what type of gadgets are you using. Otherwise, they might tell the authorities even before they can buy. So do you have a system of getting what you want in order to implement this? Because it might end up on paper, and somebody might even sabotage you. If the whole system was rotten and some people are not happy about what is happening, they might even have started sabotaging. So I don't want a situation whereby after 12 months, then the short term hasn't even moved, and then you start shifting goalposts, saying no, they didn't give me money for this, they didn't give me this and that. The head of CETA has gone on leave for this period. I couldn't do this and that, which is not workable. And I think as we are sitting here, we should be, maybe the general must tell us that, okay, this is the budget that he wants, and we have that budget. Because It has always been a problem when it comes to that. The question is, does the strategy depend on resources? Or is it the other way around? If it depends on resources, then we can't call it a strategy. It must be there, and the resources must follow in order to correct and repair and redirect. So I think on that level, on a higher level, that would be the duty of the committee to see to it that, because this is very, very satisfying. Even a person who doesn't understand, who can't read, he can clearly see the corrupt person carrying money here. So it's really very, you can easily understand. So I would plead that, get your budget for the whole thing, and let's see whether you otherwise I would rather advise you not to have the time frames if you don't have the resources to implement that. In terms of public perception, well, in an area like crime intelligence, well, public perception is important, but people usually don't understand intelligence. And it means what they think might be relevant to what crime intelligence do. And even if they keep on hammering you, you can't go on the paper and explain to them what you do. So why should you worry about that? Let subs worry and see how they on a higher level. I mean, they will just hammer you, and even if, you know, it's painful if you are beaten and you cry and nobody seems to have sympathy on you. So I don't think you need to spend too much resources on what the public thinks. Thank you, Chairperson.
Honorable Markey, Honorable Mbele. Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you to General Jacobs for the presentation. I mean, everyone knows that crime intelligence has been in crisis for at least 6 years, if not longer. And that's been evident from the year-on-year increases in organized crime. We've seen it every year with the crime stats. It's your trio crimes and other property crimes, rhino poaching, illegal firearm trafficking, etc. And I think that's where, if I can just quickly hijack the last point that Honorable Market made, I think that's where the public perception issues come in, is that the public may not necessarily understand the operational intricacies of crime intelligence, and they probably shouldn't, because that's how your syndicates then are able to sidestep the police. But the public knows when crime intelligence is not working, because there's spikes in burglaries in their neighborhoods. They see the drug trafficking increasing in their schools. They feel less safe and secure because syndicates and criminal gangs are able to run rampant without any effective counterbalance to that. And that's unfortunately has been the case, is that the SAPS does not have a grip on the dynamics and the levels of organized crime in this country. Obviously exacerbated by porous borders and ineffectiveness on the part of other state agencies. And it's an issue that can't be ignored, because organized crime can only be countered through effective crime intelligence. You've got to have the surveillance, you've got to have the tracking, you've got to do the infiltration, and then you've got to do those disruptions that Honorable Ramachandran referred to, and ultimately crack the spine of the syndicates and dissolve their activities. Only crime intelligence can do that. Other stakeholders can compensate for shortcomings in visible policing. You know, you've got your CIDs that can deter opportunistic crime. Private security can compensate for rapid response, etc. But nobody else can do crime intelligence, and that's why it does need to be fixed. And even in terms of operations and investigations, you can have all the detective service and vispol activity in the world that you want. If it's not intelligence-led, you're just shooting in the dark. So that is why this is central. And Chair, of course, it's no coincidence that those 6 years of CI crisis / organized crime increases were years of leadership instability and leadership vacuum. Obviously, the starting point was the suspension of the former DIVCOM Mdluli, as well as the appointment of former Commissioner Pieja. That correlation and that overlap is obvious, and there's no contestation. Also worth mentioning that there were severe leadership shortcomings at the ministerial level over the same period. So the good news, I guess, is that those leadership deficiencies, I think, have been largely addressed. At the ministerial level, I think one can say up to now that a measure of confidence is warranted in the appointments of Mr. Tuele. At the NPC level, Commissioner Sithole is also someone that one can feel at ease in driving and steering the organization. And then with General Jacobs being Divisional Commissioner, I think that also puts minds and hearts at rest. But then that brings me to my first question, which is, has General Jacobs and the broad management team, have they looked at the leadership shortcomings within crime intelligence, both in terms of posts like component heads, so all the cogs in the machine that make things tick, but also CI leadership at provincial and cluster level? Because I can tell you now, it won't be any good if we sort out the higher levels with the turnaround strategy, but then things get stuck and get bottlenecked when your directives and your strategy are meant to cascade down to the operational levels. So have we done the same kind of seemingly very good analysis in identifying risk factors and gaps at the components head, provincial, cluster level environments, so that we don't have a situation of crime intelligence having its one hand tied behind its back when you sort it out the other hand? It needs to be able to flow all the way down the organization seamlessly, effectively, and speedily. My second point to touch on, Chair, is that for a number of years, SAFE's management has been enamored with this word that comes up every now and then, which is that of purification. And it's a relevant term because much purification is needed, especially in the CI environments. In Zulu, it would have been said, "Let division ibolile," rotten, rotten, rotten. So there's much, much cleanup work to be done. So my simple question there is, what's the plan to implement and drive that purification? Are we doing a skills audit? There was sort of vague mention of human resource management as obviously one of the drivers in implementing this, but are we doing a literal comprehensive top-to-bottom skills audit so we can find the people who are not fit for purpose and need to be moved elsewhere or ideally actually removed from the system? Are we doing background checks? I know that speaks to vetting, but, is that a key focus? And in particular, because Honorable Marke was asking about the time frame issues, is that purification dimension part of the short-term time frame or the medium-term time frame? Because we need that to happen as quickly as possible. And then finally, Chair, I want to touch on the aspect of budget expenditure. And it's more of an echo of a question, because I think I've asked this at least twice before in previous budget hearings. CI has a 2 billion odd rand budget, and in the financial reporting, there's always pretty much 99.something% utilization. And the question, at the risk of being a stuck record, where has that money been going? And how does the turnaround strategy speak to getting more bang for our buck and making sure that the budget spend actually speaks to impact? We know the allegations of how many resources within CI have been abused in the past. The allegations of witness protection program safe homes being misused as holiday homes for a few connected cronies. The plundering of the Secret Service accounts, which unfortunately we don't have insight into, but the stories are there. Everyone knows that something very bad has been happening in that environment, and it's been used basically as an ATM for cronies to tap into for personal benefits, as opposed to that being used to pay informants, so that we have the footprints and the footprint of informants that the presentation speaks for the lack of, in order to get the raw information analyzed, processed, and packaged into products that can assist with intelligence-driven operations. So what's the financial picture been, and how is the turnaround strategy going to address that? Because if we align the strategy with operational capacity backed by sufficient resources, we can do nothing but win and easily slash organized crime within a year or two in this country. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, honorable members. It seems the members used this morning some part of their minutes for next Tuesday's debate, but members are welcome at all times. Right, let's welcome to the second round. General Sithole, you're welcome.
Yeah, thanks very much, Honorable Chair. We will be responding together. I'll just take the strategic part as usual. Maybe, Chair, it might just be important for me to start with the question that talks to the stabilization and normalization of CI. The picture that I want to create, but by the time we came in, there were two challenges. One was the stabilization of the organization, SAPS, which you could not ignore because the way the state of the organization was, it was a little bit disabled to respond to crime. But two, there's been a community outcry, which required immediate stabilization of crime, otherwise the community outcry would escalate even to the level of the president. Hence, we declared the stabilization of the normalization of crime at the same time the stabilization of the organization. Then you get down to CI, we needed to undertake the stabilization of that environment. So all the three, they go simultaneously. There's none of the three that you would ignore. But then I'm sure we may all agree the damage was severe. And when the damage is severe, you cannot repay it over one day. Hence, the plan and the strategy. But I wanted to make the committee feel as at ease that over and above this strategy, there's a quick win action plan which operationalizes the short term. And the quick win action plan provide an immediate response to issues that require action now. And the quick win action plan is a costed plan from the existing limited resources. So we are making use of the existing limited resources to sponsor the action plan so that we respond now. So all the now issues are part of the quick win action plan. Then CI is a division that got caught by an under-budgeting backlog. So the current budget and resourcing of CI is far from enabling CI to respond to the current challenge. And as a result, as part of the strategy, CI has been instructed to undertake a budget and resource planning process, which is now part of the business case that is going to Cabinet and Treasury. Therefore, that's how we are dealing with the under-resourcing and the under-budgeting part. And what we're pointing out in the business plan, maybe the one example we want to give to the committee is that the technology capability of CI at the present moment is far from matching the technology modus operandi advancement by criminals. And my directive has been clear. we are currently reviewing the technological requirement for CI in the organization. That process is at an advanced stage, so we are acquiring technology that should talk to CI being capable. And further to that, yesterday we did speak about the population stats vis-a-vis policing. Firstly, it's an exercise from a strategic intelligence point of view for us to get an early warning that the population is likely to outgrow the policing capability so that we start matching that. What has not been happening is that this process was not previously linked to our strategic plan, because as you proceed with the operational areas of your strategic plan, the population also grow equal. But what we have done now, we have linked population growth to the strategic plan, which is part of the personnel plan, and this applies the same to CI at the present moment. While we respond through the quick win action plan, we are then addressing the medium to long-term issues. And the last thing I wanted also to point out, because there's been mentions made of organized crime. We again open to the committee. We came previously, when we presented the turnaround, we made mention of the OCTA strategy, which is the unconventional policing approach. That process collapsed previously in the organization. As a result, syndicates, they started relaxing. But that process has been reinstated between crime detection, CI, DPCI, and all of those. It's currently part and parcel of the quick win action plan. Therefore, through the quick win action plan, we are currently providing a response to syndicates. One of the examples, I think we have cracked the high syndicates, and we even arrested the number one suspect of the heist. And we are also cracking a number of those that are dealing with drugs. So there is an average response that we're providing, but there's a dire need for that particular area to be intensified, which I think is what General Jacobs is doing at the present moment. We also further acknowledge and appreciate the confidence. But the only time we realize that things are wrong is when we're correcting them. And as a result of the correction, there will be quite a lot of questions. But those questions, they come as a surprise that, things were like this. But they will only be like this when we're changing them. And we will continue to change them. Then, Chair, I think there's part of your questions, the number one question on the corruption in the CJS, whether it is clear that we'll afford him the opportunity and General Zumane to talk to it.
Thank you, General Sitole. General Jacobs.
Thank you, Chair, honorable members, and thank you. I think obviously I'm not speaking loudly. Okay, thank you, Chair. And for the and can you hear me now? Okay, thank you. Thank you, Chair. I think what has been important in the last 4 months as part of the turnaround is the support that I think we have both from the Minister and from the National Commissioner and the Senior Management. I think that is important. I think it deals with, I think, the question whether the strategy will be able to be implemented and resourced. I thought just as a background, as a key background, and because there's synergy between what we do and the synergy with ourselves and the turnaround strategy or vision of the National Commissioner, there will always be that kind of integrated support, and the resources will come from that place. I think, Chair, in terms of your question, you asked about how do we look at the new world, I think, and what is the stats telling us, and what is this issue of the external population, our African population versus the the movement of people in and out of the country. I think that's the whole issue is we approach it from what is the future of crime look like? And that deals with what is the future of the world look like? Where do we integrate? And so largely, the issue of the threat management system will enable us to understand the threats that people, whether it's an important modus operandi, whether it's people that as a phenomena brings that in. I think one of the members, Honorable Molabati, raised the issue of these products, the expired products, counterfeit goods, all of those matters, deals with this issue of what does the future of crime look like? And I think that, so both on the issue which the National Commissioner always raises with us, the issue of the dark web and cyber crime and the cyber world, do we understand that a lot more? And I think part of our positioning and our posture is to begin to prepare ourselves for that kind of dynamic. I think part of our analysis also shows that there's, yes, I think more visually because we see streams of people crossing the border. These are the poor and the vulnerable, the needy, you know, the economic migrants. But we actually have large movements of people from the rest of the world that fly in. And we're beginning to track those movements. A lot of the arrests, a lot of the organized crime, as you correctly said, Chair, is directly linked to those kind of things, like the sophistication of the kidnapping syndicates and the technology they use tells you that it's not just these people across the border, I mean, they're by foot, but it's got to do with a lot more bigger systems at play. The issue of money laundering, the Awala systems, how that works, and for us to understand those issues. So part of our analysis is to begin to unpack crime as we know it, and why is it expressing itself in the way we do. But also I think it's to also understand, in addition to that, what are the systems that the country works on? Like, I mean, CIT essentially is a byproduct of, as we did say, of the way money moves. And therefore, money moves, how money moves, how organized is it, and how is it protected? That essentially is, so cash in transit is a function of those things. So the same in all the other systems. How is the technology footprint developing? And are we embedding, as it's being developed, are we embedding what they call embedded security systems within the technology footprint? Within retail, are we embedding security systems into that to ensure that those issues are being addressed? So part of what CI is doing is to begin to understand industry by industry, beginning to work our way through that. I think General Honorable Member Ramatlakane speaks about the taxi issue. It's really a function of a transport management system that has not been complied with. So you get in the Land Transport Act says very clearly for every urban space development there must be a transport management plan. Around the development of the Africa Mall there was no transport management plan. So on the day it opened there was a murder. Now there's no way an intelligence capability should predict that murder. What the intelligence capability must be before is to be more strategic and ensure that security is embedded into the transport management plan of that development to ensure that taxi issues are more sustainably addressed. We are in Cape Gate, when that developed, we had 60, I think when General Fazi was the deputy here, we had something like 60 murders as a result of that thing not being managed by both the city and by the developer. There was no transport management plan, and the consequence, people fought over routes. So that's also part of the future of crime. If we don't manage those things, then I think we will deal with those matters clearly. Then I think you raised, I think, the issue about whether we're developing the skill, the requisite skill, Chair. I think as part of that process of, as we do the analysis, we will understand the skill requirement, and then we will address the match to enable us to match that one. Are you confident, you asked Chair, are we confident to develop informal footprint? And I think we yes, and we should be developing. It will be systematic over time, and therefore it's important that we understand how the crime is developing and the various industries it's covering, so we understand how that, and then to embed our informal network within the industries. to understand that more. And I think the taxi issue is similar. Where do we pitch at the right level? I think, Chair, I think that answers the questions you've asked, I'm hoping so. Then Honourable Mabija asked about the vetting strategy. And it's, Honourable Members, always the challenge about do we go to the top or do we start at the bottom? So it's our understanding that we should have a healthy mix, a percentage of at the bottom, percentage in the middle, and a percentage at the top, in order to ensure that we cover. How do we decide where the percentage at the bottom must be? Will be based on the risk assessment of the stations, the crimes reported in the stations, the community complaints will enable us to determine: do we target these stations, or do we target stations? Do we target Western Cape versus Eastern Cape, for example? So that would be the determination. As before, it was whoever applied, we vet. Now we're saying, no, we must be proactive in the vetting and identify through a risk management process and through the personnel process we will begin to. So at this point, we're a bit reactive because the people are already in the organization, but the personnel plan will enable us to begin to deal with it long term. As people come in, we do screening. As they progress, we improve the level of screening to various levels. By the time they reach SMS, they would have gone through screening, checks, confidential secret. By the time they top management, top secret is a natural progression. So that's part of the process as well. So we'll have to get that mix right. I'm hoping Honourable Member, I've answered that question. I think there was the question of...
Just a moment. Follow up, Honourable Mabija.
Just a follow-up question. Do you perceive the current vetting process as effective?
Thank you, Chair. I think in the last session, as part of this review, is reviewing, we did mention about the whole vetting process. That vetting was seen, so partly it's effective in that when people submit their application, we are able to screen completely. The challenge is because it was initiated by an application process, we are now saying, we're turning it around to say that we also, in addition to that, identify through the process of the lifestyle audit, through the process of the different things, identify challenges and then reconfiguring. We're also looking at, in the system, we have restricted is a vetting, part of the vetting process. So you can do widespread screening of areas. So there is a need for an adjustment. What we found is a need for an adjustment in the vetting process. So there is a part that's effective. Others need an adjustment, and that's part of that process as well. And to ensure that we're more proactive in the way we vet, and therefore our work with the personnel sector is so important, whether we do declarations, that declaration is seen as part of the vetting process. So I think that's how we, that deals with the question, Chair. Honourable Mula had asked about slide 6, what do we mean by repair? Is in the finding, we had found, like I indicated now, that there were some challenges in the vetting environment. There were some challenges in the HR environment, and we had to repair those things. In the fact that we're delaying too long in the disciplinary matters, we have to speed up and repair the HR people on our neck. You're supposed to have so many months by which you must charge the person and by which the trial must be finished. So those issues we had to repair and correct. The utilization of funds, we had to ensure that meets the requirement, that our 6 monthly inspection is complied with. So those matters, if we didn't meet it, we had to repair those things in the assessment of what we found. So we'll repair those areas and redirect others. I think that's what we meant by that one. Station level, at ECI station level improving is, I think the National Commissioner mentioned about the, we have at the CIOs at the station, and that purpose is really the Crime Information Officer. It's an extension. They collect the stats, they do analysis, crime patterns, but to place them at the center of the station. I know in my time as a station commissioner, the first thing you do in the morning, you see the CIO, and then you see the MIO. the one that gives you the management information to see that systems is correct, and then you do the CIO, and they give you the picture, and then you do your station inspection to walk the cells, do all of that. When you have that, by the time you start with your station meeting, you have a sense of what's going on in your station for the last 24 hours. So that CI is part of the continuous policing process. So the CIO process is about ensuring what the National Commissioner also is saying is ensuring that they stay there, that they're not moved to become this and become that, but they actually in the station, and they develop there, and they grow there. So when they promoted, that they are replaced. I think that's what is meant by the CIO. So yes, we're improving that, and combined with that is what I think Honorable Ramat Lakhan is also asking, the issue about how do we miss, what is our footprint, how do we miss. So our intelligence, our informal footprint must also be in place. So we have both the CIO who must have informers, the detectives will have informers, and then we will have informers. Honorable member, Honorable Mhlongo is mentioning Honorable member, you mentioned about KZN and this. I've heard about some of the allegations about all I know is there's no general beside in CI besides the provincial head of CI. There's no other general that is there. There's no, as far as I know, I've heard all the stories, but there's no, but that person doesn't, is not a member of the police. I can say that unequivocally. That is the connection. Otherwise, we'll have to talk offline so we can hear a bit more detail about some of those things. But also, as CI, I can say unequivocally that there's no operation to destabilize any political party. There's no structure like that. There's no instruction like that. If anything like that exists, we will have to talk. Then that will be obviously ultra virus, and clearly that needs to be addressed. But I can say unequivocally, there's no operation that looks at political parties as a whole. So I think that, to be clear, and even any legal organization, unless we know there's a crime they commit, but there's no political party that we know that has committed a crime. So I can say that unequivocally, Chair. Then Honorable Molabate has asked
Honorable General Jacobs, Honorable Mhlongo.
No, thank you very much. No, thank you very much, General, for that. I consider that as your own very honest assessment, which might not necessarily be informed by the past where we come from. Because we are where we are because of these people. You know, this gentleman, Marimuthu in Durban, I'm now citing his name openly, because even the top intelligence officers are confirming the destructive role that man is playing in that province. I'll brief you just a brief. The investigation into so-called allegation of gunfire allegedly by our CIC in the Eastern Cape, which was investigated, I believe, by Brigadier Governor of TPCI there, finds its way now in KZN, where then Marimuthu says, bring it here, so that then we get, and money is there. I will actually then request, Chairperson, that the general get services of Inspector General to actually prove that, because these things are real. They link to the economic control, wrestling of political power, using Africans, setting them against each other, and all these things. This man must actually be investigated so that we can crack this thing. It's real, it's living, it is there.
Yeah, and maybe members, just to indicate again, if there's any complaints with regard to the conduct of any member of TPCI, of course there's the inspecting judge, and that would be the correct forum to deal with that. And in terms of the intelligence service, of course the inspector general is the right forum to process that. But let's give General Jacobs an opportunity to respond to that and the other questions. Thank you. General Sitole, you want to come in? Thank you, sir.
No, thanks, Honorable Chair. I'm not protecting General Jacobs, but I think we need to protect the Honorable Member, because he's sharing critical information. in public. I think we will do a national intervention on the net, and then we engage with the honorable member so that we deal with the subject in the manner and the process that it deserves. We are taking serious note of what he's mentioning, but we wouldn't like him to mention further than that. Yes, we will share that between himself and General Jacobs. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, General Sitole. General Jacobs, we can.
No, thank you. I think the National Commission has given clear direction on those issues. We will be talking to that. And then I think the question was asked by the Honorable Mulabati about the restoration. My apologies. No, this one is mine. I'm in the middle of it. There. Okay, thank you. Honorable Mulabati about the concern about our restoration. I think the issue is also based on that, as we say, as we repair, the CI has got a very clear mandate. Is to collect intelligence within the legal framework of the law. So I think that's the first clear. So even areas we have strayed from that is to restore, to get us back to within the scope and the framework of the law. Then if we haven't produced the requisite production, then we should get to what our annual plan says, the targets we've set, that we must meet those targets. I think that's really what we meant to restore. And in the process, restore, I think, the matter that Honorable Mbele mentioned about why the public see CI or if organized crime is the visual picture of whether we're doing our work or not. As we begin to address those issues, we will be able to restore the reputation of SAPS again as we are a subset organization within SAPS. I think that's really what is meant by that, Honourable Member. I think the point you've raised about counterfeit goods and expired is part of the area that we're looking at, the issue of the whole counterfeit goods phenomenon. I think there's been there's an operation that's currently running now. There's been a lot of reporting in the press where we've seized tons of things being produced with false labels. From baking soda to all these, and they're currently busy, there's an operation underway focusing specifically on the counterfeit goods. Historically, it's been focusing on counterfeit clothes and all of that, but people, I think there's videos around yesterday about where people are, where they're selling expired milk, and they're putting on new labels, for example. So these issues are being as part of a specific operation to target where it's coming from. And Honourable Chair, it is linked to some foreign nationals being behind how it's organised and how it's distributed. So that is being addressed. You asked the question, Honourable Mulabati, about SAPS. Did CI alert SAPS that they haven't responded? In the last 2 years, in our performance, one of the indicators says operational or information provided has been operationalized proactively or reactively. So we are measured not just by that we gave information. Did we ensure, it says in there, ensuring that information we provide is operationalized. So it's in our performance, so there will be no situation where we provide information to General Massimola's component and we don't follow up to ensure that it's acted upon. It's no more for me to say, no, but I gave the information. It now says we must ensure that it's operationalized. So that is now written into our performance agreement. So otherwise I can claim, no, we gave. Here's the reports. Nobody acted. We must ensure it's acted upon. I think that's the difference. So if it does happen, to that extent, I'll be, and my component will be responsible for the other component not acting, because we didn't ensure that they acted on the information. We won't know everything, but that which we know, we must distribute and ensure that it's accurate. I think that is we literally don't have a choice. I can't say other people didn't act. I think that's why it was written into the performance agreement. Honorable Ramaswakane mentioned the issue of the time frame. As yes and no, Honorable Member, in that we, as some things are as we I think there's operational matters we can repair now, but the systems underpinning it, we know requires, if for example we find people are not matching the skill set required, as the chairperson asked, then how do you move? Our policies are very clear. You can't just move people out wholesale. So there has to be a systematic process of consultation, movement, how do we move those people out, and how do we bring in new people? So those are the so yes, they are, it is a hamstring this, but also we have to follow due process to ensure that we change things correctly. Also that we procure within the scope of the law and the treasury regulations. I thought those are the issues.
Then, sorry, General Jacobs, General Sitole, you want to come in?
No, I think he's wrapping up. I'll just qualify after he has done with your permission. Thank you.
And I think Honorable Marke has mentioned the issue about, yes, under the issue of resources, that the resources match the strategy. There is a resource plan, and this the thing that we were saying that we, the business case made by led by the National Commissioner to ensure that both our current resource plan is adjusted and also what our future needs are. That is put out in the business case. So in that way we would have dealt with that. And like I said earlier, Honorable Maki, we have the support of the senior management and the minister in the turnaround, so that matches very clearly those things.
So, Jacob, just a moment. I think just one step back. Honorable Robert Akoni, want to come in?
No, thank you, Honorable Chair. No, the one thing, General, that I was asking with respect to the footprint, and the footprint with respect to certain categories of crime that has been identified. I was not necessarily saying, maybe I put it wrongly, I was not necessarily saying that the lack of integration of planning insofar as transport planning or predictions is the responsibility of the police, because that's not your responsibility. All I was saying, and I was making an example of that, I was saying if you take for an example taxi conflict, not necessarily the new malls, I'm talking about permanent problem in Western Cape. To date, from January to now, there's 47, if I'm correct, I'm right, 47 murder, specifically hitmen in the taxi industry. So the point I was saying, somehow we need to have a permanent footprint that's able to give you, and if I can express that to say, in the 47, there may have not been any arrest or conviction. And that shows that there is a lack of informant in that particular sector. That's the point I was making, that it's an area that we need to be looking at in terms of it. So I was not necessarily stretching it beyond the police capabilities. I was simply saying, internally, that is indicative of a problem.
Yes, thank you, Honorable Chair. I think firstly, let's say we agree with the Honorable Member, and we are also taking the input positively. But from the direction that I've given, I said we need a dedicated stabilization of the taxi industry. That is one, which will actually lead us to the footprint. But two, I said we pull all stops which could include even a dedicated unit or task team that should deal with this particular matter. Beyond the stabilization, we're also then looking at the normalization. At the normalization, that's when the transport comes, which is then your multidisciplinary. But beyond the transport, we also want to work with the other departments, especially the Department of Economic Affairs and others, for the reshaping of the taxi industry so that it gets stabilized, that is forever. But the stabilization a normalization of the taxi conflict in the country. That's where we're basing the footprint. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Commissioner. Charles Jacobs.
The last, I think the Honorable Mbele's last few questions. Have we looked at the leadership shortcomings and clustered at the provincial level? Yes, we have. I think that's part of the review and doing the risk and gap analysis that will enable us to make the determination. But as I said, as we're developing the threat management system and understanding each of the threats, we will then be able to match the placement and the type of people we need to mitigate each threat. What are the plans to drive the skills order that deals with the for that issue? We have also, I think, the National Commission has given us an indication about the personnel, the new personnel, that the recruitment process, how we're recruiting, and the people that we just, that the new people that we're bringing in is a particular type of people, and we're setting the scope for that. So we are kind of matching both the new ones and matching the, and upskilling the old ones. But the budget expenditure, I think we've at least from this, from the open account, also we can say clearly that we've had a clean audit. One, so there's been no issues of corruption. Then also the issue about mostly our budget is spent on personnel from the open account, and 20% on goods and services. Really, has been as an operational thing. So our budget has been spent on that. Yes, we should improve our informant network. To be able to, and once we improve that, our spend on the informal network will improve. We're part of the technology, as the National Commissioner said. The review requirements has been developed, and the whole technology framework. So how we purchase, where we purchase, will also increase the spend on equipment versus just on informants. I think that's where we are with that one. So thank you. I hope I've answered all the questions.
Thank you. Yes, I'll come back to the members. Yes, yes, General
Chimone. Oh, sir.
No, Chairman, thank you very much. One over 2%. Now, only 2 points that I want to emphasize. So on your question, Chairperson, the issue of corruption. We are having countering measures. I'm not going to mention which capacity is it to be precise, but we're having countering measures in terms of within the CIA itself, and that countering measures also seeks to deal with the project-driven investigation, both in the detectives as well as in DPCI. But we are having that to make sure that everybody that investigates some of the cases that are very heavy, that are huge, that are being taken care of as well. The anti-corruption unit within the detectives as well seeks also to assist the crime intelligence in terms of the issue of the corruption, Chairperson. I think that's what you raised. But also you raised the issue of the new threats. My understanding is that you're also talking about the transnational crimes that might be engulfing us, either by air or through sea or by land. I think also in that particular space as well, we are also looking into that, but we are using what we call triple P's. That is so predictive in approach, very precise in nature, as well as proactive. So I think that's what the crime intelligence seeks to do as well in terms of the imaging and priorities of both the National Commissioner and the Minister's priorities as well. On the issue of the alert and the threats that were given by CI, I can just mention one case of BB in Bloemfontein. Crime intelligence played a very important role in that case. Hence, BB was arrested, and then that's what we call crime intelligence that is at the center of every move within the South African police service. Lastly, indeed, Honorable Mark, I agree with you that we are very ambitious in terms of the crime intelligence. There are certain things that we are putting into place. But for us to be able to do that, I think we need to be very generational in nature. And that, what I mean by that is that we need to make sure that we look at our generation of the tools of trades and to make sure that we update them. And indeed, that will definitely need budget as well. So I think for that, I must say that National Commissioner and the Minister have been pressing on us and been pressurizing us to make sure that, Chairperson, that we are very clear in terms of what is it that we need and what type of technology that we need so that we're able to be modernized as well. Thank you very much, Chair.
General, I think you will want to come in, but I think members, if there's any follow-ups, let's do that quickly before tea, because remember, we still want to do the restructuring. That's a very important. The restructuring of SAPS is a major topic. But if there's any additional questions, let's just put it. Yes, Honourable Bailey, I'll come to you.
Thanks, Chair, and thank you for the responses. Just my one additional question relates to the specific identified challenge or finding in the situational analysis, slide 7, around factionalism. And I'm going to give the General's forewarning that this is one of those questions that have been known to elevate heartbeat rates and blood pressures, so prepare yourselves. This factionalism within the CI division, was it purely internal office politics, personality clashes, you know, your run-of-the-mill organizational dynamic that happened anywhere? Or was it primarily and fundamentally linked to CI being co-opted into external political factional fighting? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. My questions are not responded. The one for the SKPs and two questions for crime intelligence that says, how far are you with the vetting of senior managers at crime intelligence and SARS? My second question is that how are you going to make sure that there is stability at crime intelligence? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Bija.
Going to continue with this strategy?
No.
I'm having a new question, please.
Just put it now, because I'm going to close this one, because we have to move on. Yes.
Thank you. On page 21, on National Stabilization Project, I see the first arrow to meet operational priorities. There are stipulated 8 items there. And I'm trying to start in something like it's a crime, women and children's rape, assault and killings, and it's a sketch. So I don't know whether it's within one of the above stipulated 8 items. And maybe that sketch is not within your mandate, or maybe it's a slip of planning, whatever. May you please clarify me on that, or maybe it is not, I don't know, maybe because if I can say it here, we have a male choir, only 2 women here, and maybe that has got an effect on males not taking into consideration as this as a sketch and a serious one. And without women and children, there will be no SAPS officials. May you please clarify me?
Thank you. I'll come to you as Honourable Ramatakane. Members, we need to really make our questions concise. Thanks.
No, thank you, Honourable Chair. And just a follow-up. General Jacob, the on slide on page 7, I'm borrowing the term, on this factionalism issue that you found. Has now everybody, given that you now skin the sheep, you are now in charge, has everybody now accepted the new order, that there is a bigger picture that needs to be supported, and they are now moving in one direction? That's your question. Then general thought. This one goes to you, unfortunately. It's not for General Jacobs to answer. Can you confirm? There's been lots of... there is no smoke without fire. When you see a smoke, you know there is a fire. Have you closed down all the units that were known and unknown in the crime intelligence? What I want to know is the confirmation of that has happened from yourself, those that they were operating as a result of the factionalism, or either way. Can you that confirm that that has been closed down? There's only one line of that intelligence that is operative under General Jacob today.
Right, thank you. I'm Mumshlomo, you the last.
No, thank you, Chairperson. I think, Chairperson, one will need to herald General Jacob for this repair on the oversight on page slide 6. Because I think we haven't been told the truth there for quite too long. Now, but in order to avoid any abuse of the state intelligence against for narrow partisan interests, for example, this crisis this country comes from recently, almost for 9 years. Now, how, maybe if General can just give an insight so that we can then be able, because I will be very honest with you, General. Ever since I came to this parliament, crime intelligence report has always been just about 2 or 3 pages, everything going well, well, boom, on your face, on the other hand. Now, have an oversight so that this committee doesn't just become a dwarf of being told things that are completely way out. You will bear with me, Chairperson, because really, when things happened, even at SSA, I asked myself, where was the Committee of Parliament when such things happened under the nose of this, particularly the Intelligence Committee? Now, with these oversight organs, which are good, because the Auditor General will have to play his role in terms of spending of money and all these things, value for money and all, and Parliament and all, Inspector General of Intelligence. Now, what assurance are you going to give us so that we can then be able to hold you also accountable to say, this is what you sought to repair in this particular fashion, so that nobody can just run amok with state organs, making it his own pocketbook thing, that he can just do whatever he or she wants. Thank you.
Right, thank you, Honourable Members. Just 2 quick follow-ups from my side, just outstanding information. The question I had with reference to the Minister's input last week, the chain of corruption in the criminal justice system in terms of CI, can we get an assurance that all the rogue elements are out of CI? Also those mentioned in the media, have those issues been dealt with? And secondly, the assurance that the products, the proactive products of assessing what's happening in the country, I've referred to the Hermanus case and other cases, are you able to produce every morning to the Minister a product saying this is the risks, this is the possible issues that will come up, that the country is not taken with surprise if things happen? Can we get that undertaken? Thank you. That's the questions, National Commissioner.
Thanks very much, Honorable Chair. Maybe, Chair, I need to start with the last one. The first Firstly, we would like to give the committee the assurance that firstly, from a practical perspective, I think on a weekly basis, CI give me an intelligence briefing. And that same briefing extend to the minister. The minister is given intelligence briefing. And we are currently working through the JCDS cluster for the National Security Council to escalate the intelligence briefing to the president formally here. But at the present moment is given, but we want to link it to the National Security Council. I've also issued a directive that all premiers must be given intelligence briefing about the state of the provinces. And therefore, Chair, if there's any possibility or any warning that talks to the stability of the country, is picked up in these particular processes and we operationalize immediately. Then, Chair, I just wanted to add on the models, weather and the new world, just to say in the turnaround vision, we have the modus operandi counter strategy. And what we're doing at the present moment, we do not throw the baby with the bath water. From the basics, the back to basics, then we take what works. But what we wanted to inform the committee is that modus operandi development and advancement is a subject that is growing very rapidly. And the invention of new modus operandi by criminals is now almost a daily issue because they've got organized innovation and creativity session in which they research against our interventions and they always find a new modus operandi. As a result of that, modus operandi development has extended to impact on our training because they also analyze our training standards, then they come with a new modus operandi that outdates our training. And my instruction has extended to that particular field to say, even our training and development strategy must have access to new modus operandi. And the few examples is the deep web modus operandi, which is a capacity that we need to continuously develop. And the investigation has changed. The crime scene is no longer on the ground, but in space. And you need an investigator will connect that crime scene to the space. But you also have a situation where the suspect is in Russia and the crime scene is in South Africa, and you must be able to connect the two. So your training must be very evolutionary in order to speak to that. But in future, if the committee also so want, we will be able to give you a modus operandi report that tells you which are the new modus operandi on the core and what do they require. And mostly, a new modus operandi, when it creeps in, it will creep in the form of outdating and overriding your resources. If you do not upgrade those resources, then it will go unchallenged. So I think that is the new world that we're continuously working to. Then there was a question of strategies following the top bottom. We just wanted to confirm that they follow both the bottom and the bottom approach as well as the top approach. At the top bottom approach, we're linking policy and strategy. And at the bottom up, it's the operations. And then they are meeting there. One of the examples, I personally instructed that we convene an analysis endeavor. I think all the analysts in the country, they will be under one roof. And we'll be talking about crime analysis, modus operandi analysis, and root cause analysis. So that's where we maintain the balance. The two people who escaped, yeah, unfortunately, they kicked the roof of the van. We would like to proactively accept our shortcomings if the van was inspected, we'd have seen that the canopy has rusted to a point that it would no longer hold. But as a result, they kicked it open. It was rusted. And obviously, the matter is also investigated by the police. There's an internal investigation that will talk to the basics, talking to that. But it will also then talk to how do we reinforce such. But they all been rearrested within 12 hours. Then the president's panel, I think the turnaround strategy is flexible and is adjustable to the president's panel. But from the side of the police, I think in few areas, which has been pronounced by the president, also in the State of the Nation address, we have become proactive. And our strategy is flexible to accommodate any direction that would be coming from the president's panel. Just on the expired products and all that, the only one thing I want to add on the basis of the answer that has been given by General Jacobs is that in the turnaround, we have also designed the illicit economic combating and prevention strategy. It's a very broad type of a crime that actually attacks the grand economic strategy of the country. So we are also responding there. In terms of the missing pillars, I think the pillar that we would like to bring in is the modus operandi counter strategy. We should talk to your continuous modus operandi and the response that is to that. We've responded on the taxi violence. We're looking at a dedicated approach. The public perceptions, Chair, I think we decided to be guided by some of the seven logics of philosophy, and one of them is make peace with the past so as it doesn't spoil the present, and that is one of our approaches. Our second approach is what others think of you is none of your business. And the last one, I always face this pressure even in ENCA and all that, where the public wants to know more than they are supposed to know. And I usually console them, Chair, and say, stop thinking too much, it's all right not to have all the answers. So there's some of the things that only need to be known by the police. So, but I give them what they're entitled to. Then the sub-certification, we agree, the current stabilization of the organization follows a purification process. And we've got some of those who have resigned. We've got a number of resignations where people are flashing out. And we've got a number of disciplinary investigations. But we're only focusing on removing elements that are contaminated. But at the same time, we motivate and we improve the morale of those who are showing that they care about the country and the organization. Sexualism within CI, I think General Jacobs and Zumane will add, but what we can confirm is that CI was infiltrated. And I don't want to use any other term. I only want to use the term CI was infiltrated, and we started working on that particular type of purification. Then on the part of politics, I think one of the things that we cleared and that we continuously clear as we renew the organization is to keep SAPS apolitics. And we are not, as an organization, we are not an affiliate of any political party. We arrest criminals. Where they are affiliated and where they belong, if they commit crime, their status has changed. They are no longer a member of something, they are criminals, and we take them to custody. And we negotiate with correctional services. We've got a good relationship then for exchange of the orange uniform. Then Chair, the national stabilization vis-a-vis the crimes against women and children. I want to explain it in this way. Crimes against women and children and all crimes, they might not reflect in the CI strategy because the CI strategy is servicing the clients. Like crimes against women and children, they feature more prominent in the crime detection strategy. They feature more prominent in the policing strategy, which is your VSPOL and the rest. And the, but the, just to keep the committee at ease, the crimes against women and children were pronounced in the minister's budget speech. So they immediately form part and parcel of policy direction for our turnaround strategy. And they are high priority on the agenda. All the environments, they prioritize them. But CI provide the intelligence foundation, and we are focusing on them. And we promise CI will continue to focus on them. The new order being accepted, let me just say one. We appointed General Jacobs, and we gave him the authority to command that environment. But he also has an ultimatum. Either he commands it or he leaves, he gives space. And the order further then extends, everyone in CI will either subject himself to his command or shape out. And that's our principle. And we're not going to continue to nurse the CI situation at the expense of the organization and the country. And I think General Jacobs, up to this far, is doing just that. And he's got a commendation from my side, up to this far. The known and unknown and the rogues elements, I think firstly, I have made my own pronouncement to say all the units that are in the organization, they must exist within the policy framework that governs the organization. That was the first principle. And they must also exist within the approved work study in the organization. Anything that fell outside that, we closed it down. I therefore want to be specific to say the rogues units, they were closed down, and I assigned the Deputy National Commissioner to deal with it. But we're not sure 100% whether there's any, but CI has been tasked to continue to dig any such. If we find it, we promise you we'll close it with immediate effect. Thank you very much.
General Sitola, I think you dealt comprehensively with most of the issues. Is there anything else? Thank you very much. Honorable members, we're going to take a 10-minute break, 10 minutes, and then we'll come back for the second part of our agenda. Thank you.
Zakuba.
Thank you.